The Robert Scott
the
Bell
Robert
Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
The voice of health, freedom, and liberty. Here's Robert Scott Bell.
All right, welcome once again to a special Sunday Conversations edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show, where I get to highlight, spotlight, and meet new folks and learn about what their journey has been to bring them to where they are today and why they believe what they believe. And we might have questions about what they believe too, which is awesome. I love learning about these wide varieties of experiences on this planet we share called Earth. And we'll have a fun time today. You know, there's an upcoming event we've been talking about a little bit on our Sunday conversations from Spiritual Awakenings International. There's a two-day event, a free event. I mean, you can donate and help them out, sure. But amazing, 40 different speakers from 14 different countries. I think they got like 96 countries represented now in participating with this Spiritual Awakening International group. And it's really designed to bring us all together, recognizing we have a common experience as human beings on this planet, and there's a spiritual thread that runs through it all. Today, we're going to meet for the first time Brent Spirit, and it looks like he's got Pakistani descent, and he's in Canada, and I'm going to learn about him because I've just met him and connected through our good friend Ann Archer Butcher, who you know connects us with the most awesome people, and to learn about something we might not know a lot about. Kundalini. Some of you are like, that sounds like an Italian pasta dish. Others of you go, oh, I know that. I do Kundalini yoga all the time. So bear with me because there's a whole lot of background that I want to learn about from Brent. And he's joining us now. And I'll tell you a little bit about what he's presenting as well on Kundalini Shakti energy or awakening and overcoming common challenges that he'll be doing on June 9th at that event. So welcome to the Robert Scott Bell Show Sunday Conversations, Brent Spirit. Hello, Brent.
Hey, Robert, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, welcome to be here. And on a dime, I get a call from my friend Ann, says, hey, you should talk to Brent. He's going to be one of the presenters. And I'm like, do you think he's available in just like a number of minutes from now? And bingo, bango, bongo, you are here. I don't know if that's a Kundalini thing, but I appreciate it. And I'm excited to meet you and learn about you.
Oh, well, it worked out for me. I actually had an appointment canceled. So I had an opening and I thought, what's this about? And then I got the call and it all made sense.
Yeah, totally. And I love the presentations to learn about with the things people are having, what we call spiritually transformative experiences. Some have called them before near-death experiences, but they don't have to involve death, that sometimes defy rational or easy explanation. And if you find out that a lot of people have these things, you're not so strange and weird, and you can talk about them. And it sounds like you might have had some experiences that led you to present here, but it says Pakistan and Canada. Are you originally from Pakistan? Did you emigrate to Canada? Tell me a little bit about your story from the beginning.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Pakistan. I immigrated to Canada with my family. I was only 1 year old, so essentially raised up here in Canada. We come from a small Catholic population in Pakistan. And so I was raised Catholic. As I got older, I had to move away from that, seeking my own answers and my own experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's how I, came across this whole Kundalini thing, of course, not an Italian pasta, and a little different than, like you mentioned, Kundalini yoga. Mm-hmm. Kundalini yoga is a branch of yoga that, has some elements and themes to do with this force called Kundalini. However, Kundalini is a universal force that we all have within us. And I think you put it really well earlier. There's a spiritual thread that ties us all together. And in some respects, we could say that that thread is the Kundalini, which we all have within us. Mm-hmm. It's the power, the spiritual power and the spiritual intelligence within us that supports us through the automatic functioning of the body in its dormant state. You could say it supports us with digestion, with growing hair, cutting nails, going through puberty. But then when we come to a certain point on our journey, when we're meant to continue our evolution, the Kundalini can be awakened, and then it supports us through a spiritual transformation, which can be pretty exciting, but really challenging as well.
Well, you know, your origin, let's say your parents, you know, lived and grew up, obviously, in Pakistan. You came as a young child. And we think about the various Orthodox religions that are predominant there. Of course, Islam, and you said from Christianity, a small group there as well. But I think of, in terms, growing up in America, when we think of the Far East, even Pakistan, we think maybe there's some mystical type things we never heard of in the West. As far as that, is there any, did your parents know of this thing called Kundalini, or was it something you brought to their attention as well?
No, they didn't know much about it at all. And in fact, what I've come to find is that unless you've experienced it for yourself, the understanding you can have will be only very rudimentary, very intellectual, very basic. And that's what makes it very difficult for those who are having these experiences to get support and answers, because, you know, they may go to maybe their professor or their yoga teacher, or, you know, they talk to their friend who's, you know, maybe a Hindu from India. And they say, tell me about Kundalini, and it's very hard to find answers. So for me, I started going through all of this just spontaneously, in a sense, you could say, not actively seeking it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I did bring up some of this stuff to my folks, it was met with a lot of resistance, you know, concern that I lost my mind, experiences like that. So it makes it very challenging. So I appreciate the opportunity here to come out and share, because though you could say it's somewhat rare, it's becoming more and more common for people to have these experiences, just like with NDEs.
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, these discussions are timely. And, you know, these conversations for me are designed to be helpful for folks. I'm not trying to convert anybody to anything. I'm just curious about the various experiences that can happen on the same planet we all share. And because I've had, you know, deeply and profound spiritual experiences in my life that defied normal Orthodox discussion or explanation, maybe like you as well, you reach a point where you go, well, I don't know, there's something going on here that I can't explain. I want to find some rational explanation or some explanation, and maybe have some level of, I don't mean obsessive control over it, but some way to know what I'm working with so that it can be of benefit pragmatically or practically, not just, you know, a way to fly off, you know, the planet, not be here, because I found out that there's a reason for us to be here too. And sometimes, you know, and I've been guilty of this, if I can call it that, in my younger life, it's like, how do I get off of this planet? This is not so much fun here, until I find out, my gosh, the spiritual benefits and gifts that are available to us through this life, how do I embrace that? How do I get deeper into that? And maybe, you know, this Kundalini will resonate for somebody that's listening.
Yeah, totally. You know, we have this idea of spiritual awakening sometimes as being, you know, awakening out of being a human being into something transcendent and immaterial, non-physical. Maybe we have experiences with the astral realms or traveling to some other dimensions. And maybe in near-death experience, maybe you experience sort of afterlife. When we return here, there's can be this question of like, well, this human body is heavy baggage. I need to drop it. I need to get out of this place and return back to those, you know, transcendent, peaceful states. Mm-hmm. But the Kundalini actually, once it begins to move through the human body, it uses the human body as its vessel to bring the transcendent into the world in an embodied way. And so the way I like to think about it, it's just like it's puberty 2.0. It's a spiritual transformation that involves the entire nervous system. Mm-hmm. Not just a sort of a shift in terms of belief or philosophy or even just a state of awareness or consciousness. It's a full shift that takes place within the body itself. And because of that, as we know, you know, it's become a bit of a buzz term, but the body keeps the score. And so this body's holding tension and fear and emotion and, a lot of stuff that's impeding the nervous system from really relaxing deep into a state of, you could say, meditative consciousness, a state of unconditional love or oneness, or just feeling safe at the very least. And so the Kundalini moves through the body. It begins to purge and purify and teach from within and heal from within, so that we can embody those, you know, very deep states of consciousness, which requires the ability to relax and the ability to allow spiritual energy to flow through the system.
Well, many people in this audience are, you know, have a definite spiritual focus in their lives, appreciate and love God and creation and appreciate life and try to support and defend it. But again, various ways to experience that. And also the words we use to describe it are often maybe describing similar things, but you know, if they come from a certain background or a religious belief or even just a language or culture, you know, we go back to ancient languages. I've used some of these terms in Sanskrit and you know, Aramaic and Hebrew and other things. I mean, there's a lot of history and language that is trying to describe similar things that we maybe don't have the words for in our, let's say, Western American English mindset. I'm just speaking for myself now, that I've had to learn a lot about these things. And you know, some of those words are really awesome. I remember learning of some of these words like bhakti, which was considered an ancient order of love. And I named one of my, when I had a cat, bhakti, love. You know, I thought that was a cool name. But these experiences often describe life force or vital force. You know, I'm a homeopath. We work with what's called vital force. In chiropractic, they work with innate intelligence. Are these perhaps other words for something similar? Or how would you describe the Kundalini as opposed to other words for energy or life force or vital force?
Yeah, this is a great question. And in general, we could say that it's quite synonymous. Ultimately, we can't quite put our finger on exactly what life force is. We can't jar it up and say, here, we've got some. So the words are useful as pointers. And then what happens is we have to turn into our bodies and feel it for ourselves. So we could say that Kundalini coincides with prana or chi or the life force, the vital force, the Holy Spirit in some contexts. Kabbalistic tradition, they speak of Shekinah, which they refer to as the indwelling of God. So it's something within us that is, you could say it's divine, it's transcendent, and yet we can perceive it moving through our system. The full term out of India and the Vedic system within yoga, the full term is referred to as Kundalini Shakti. So Shakti refers to the power or the force of consciousness, and it's a feminine force, you could say, as the goddess Shakti. And so sometimes we may refer to her as a her or a she. And so we understand her within this context to be infinitely intelligent, and so she makes use of the prana, of the life force. She manages it and orchestrates it and influences it to move through the system in certain ways to facilitate this transformation of consciousness. So that takes a little one step further from beyond just speaking about life force. We're adding an element of it's an intelligent life force. It knows what it's doing, and we can cooperate with it. I prefer the traditions of India and the Vedic traditions in yoga. It's resonated with me. I find the language, the systems are they've been established quite well. And so rather than reinventing the wheel, I just kind of said, these words work for me. I can learn these kinds of systems. But what I do recognize is that this is a universal human phenomena. And we see it all around the world throughout history, throughout all traditions, because it's human. And this is what is pushing our spiritual development forward at any point throughout history, no matter where you may be. It's this, you call it what you want. It's an intelligent force.
You talked about Indian and Vedic traditions. I'm also fascinated, again, you know, from your parents' perspective from Pakistan, you know, wasn't there a common heritage and there's history of breaking up and then the divisions that between it, but aren't there any kind of yoga type cultural practices also in Pakistan, or was that completely rejected because of the division that occurred?
Yeah, so not completely rejected. Initially, it was all one country, India, and then in the 40s, there was a split. Generally speaking, there those belonging to the Islamic faith was in Pakistan, and Hindus, Sikhs were in India. But there, it's not a black and white thing, and there are you know, people from all different cultural and religious traditions in either country. Where I'm from, in the north end of Pakistan, it's very close to Tibet. And so there's a lot of rich heritage there. Even if I'm not mistaken, there's some Buddhist sites there, or ancient Buddhist sites. So the land is steeped with that type of practice. But generally speaking now, a lot of it, I mean, even you could say even in India, a lot of people are having these experiences and can't find proper answers or support because things have just been, either intentionally kept secretive or misinterpreted. And this goes for many traditions, nearly all the traditions around the world. I often get many people from India connecting with me over here in Canada seeking some support, which is, I find it to be quite interesting.
Well, it is interesting, but you recognize beyond the cultural differences that may be significant or mild, or the borders that are somewhat artificial, even though I believe they often represent states of consciousness, in the countries that we either are born into or moved to, that we have ultimately more in common as spiritual beings inhabiting physical or human bodies and having these experiences. And yet there are those that are invested in power games and try to divide and conquer and breed distrust and hatred because we have all different belief systems. But that's what these Sunday conversations are about, is learning about the life, the various experiences on this planet, and saying, here's one thing manifesting through Brent's spirit. And it could be pretty cool to learn about. By the way, if you're just tuning in, Brent has also got a website, and we have that linked up in the show notes, kundaliniawareness.org. It looks like there's a lot of available information that you can get and support, and you can learn about things there. Also, you'll be speaking at the next Spiritual Awakenings International Conference, the 2024 conference that'll be held Saturday and Sunday, June 8th and 9th. If you'd like to learn more about Brent, we're going to get him some more sneak previews about what he may be presenting, but not all of it. He's got a whole hour-long presentation with also Q&A that will happen on Sunday, June 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time U.S. on Kundalini Shakti Awakening, Overcoming Common Challenges. And I imagine there are, especially, if you grew up for your life in Canada, which is considered kind of the West culturally, it's not really embracing a lot of what we call Eastern traditions, even though in certain parts of Canada, it's very international. You can find almost anything in Toronto, for instance, various backgrounds, and a lot of places in the U.S. as well. But a lot of what my experience has been growing up in the United States is these concepts are very foreign to us. We've not grown up with these traditions or know about them, and they could be looked at as something scary. I don't think they are. In fact, I think, again, they are describing realities of our spiritual existence and the energies that we are not only learning about, but maybe that are indeed us. As I've heard of Kundalini through yoga, right? It was focusing, and again, apologize for any misunderstanding of what I'm saying here, on lower chakra, root chakra stuff. And I think I'm just, going from the yoga understandings, it's very superficial. But take it again from that perspective for those that encounter yoga, Kundalini yoga, to more, I guess, other practices that you're engaging in that might be even beyond that.
Yeah, so Kundalini Yoga is a brand of yoga originated by a yogi, a guru by the name of Yogi Bhajan, back in the 60s. He came over to India to the West from India. And so he began teaching some practices to stir up energy in people. And so it got a lot of hype now, this word Kundalini around that. But it's important to remember that that's a brand of yoga that was brought over only by one man. Whereas in some respects, and my stance is all yoga is actually Kundalini yoga, because there is no yoga without Kundalini. There is no moving towards union with God, which is what yoga means, without this force within us. So any practice out of the yogic traditions, you could say, even bhakti, like you were describing, practices of chanting and devotion and celebrating love for the divine and love for God, that can also stir up this life force, this Kundalini Shakti within us. It can invite that energy to begin to move through us. So there's many practices that we can engage to get this energy to move. Breath work. There's some very intense breath work practices. There's visualizations. There's deep meditation. Sometimes it can happen spontaneously. To those who maybe have some sort of blunt force trauma, to those who sit to meditate just, to find some relief from anxiety, for example. I mean, this is what happened to me. I was very depressed as a teenager. I sat down to do this thing called meditation. No spiritual interest, just, you know, meditation was getting some good time, you know, some good airtime. A lot of people were recommending it. So I sat down, I turned inwards. So I drew my attention inwards and suddenly my spine began to spontaneously move and bend. Hmm. And I couldn't stop it until I opened my eyes and sort of came out of that experience. And I thought, whoa, it was almost like something was moving in my body that I didn't have any control over. I just let it go. I just thought, that's kind of weird. I'm not going to meditate. That's kind of spooky. But that's one thing that happens to many people. Hmm. The founder of Spiritual Awakenings International, Dr. Yvonne Kaysan, she as well, during her university years, sat to meditate just to, you know, get a little sharper for her exams. And she had a full-blown Kundalini awakening experience. And didn't know what it was. Just like me, didn't know what it was. And it was a whole, you know, journey trying to put the pieces together to make sense of it. So meditation's one way. The yoga practices, psychedelics, very common as well, especially lately with the psychedelic revival that's happening. A lot of people are engaging in psychedelics for either recreational use or perhaps for healing and spiritual development, and getting a little bit more than they may have asked for with a major Kundalini awakening. So this happened to me later in my journey with exploring magic mushrooms. Had a huge energetic explosion of energy, of life force, of that Kundalini up my spine. It took me into a totally transcendent experience. As well, some are also having Kundalini awakenings as a result of near-death experiences. Hmm. So perhaps maybe this is a bit of your experience. I know you mentioned a near-death experience. There's some ideas. Dr. Kaysan, who, of course, like we were just speaking about, she's had 5 near-death experiences.
Yeah, we've interviewed Yvonne on the show before at a previous, or maybe even last year's event, prior to that event, and she's really had some extraordinary experiences as well. And I love sharing, I love learning about, and that's why I appreciate you coming on and your willingness to share some of these experiences to, you know, perhaps help others that have unexplained things, unexplained phenomena. I don't like the idea, for instance, you know, you can medicate even with nature and induce euphoric or other experiences, but to some degree it's without discipline. Can I say that? That it just happens to you, as opposed to engaging in a practice where you can begin to navigate, not as a victim of who knows what's going to happen, but some way that you can, I don't know if it's direct the energy per se, but acknowledging that energy can be uplifting and spiritually transformative and empowering and maybe healing, as you say, because I'm all into healing. But the difference or distinction in terms of a disciplined practice, does it require botanical help? Or can it be used that way? You know, it's a big question I'm asking, because people are having these spiritually transformative experiences via many different methods. Maybe there's some practice that you've engaged in that could help, you know, give somebody a technique or somebody to, oh, I can do that, you know, something simple.
Yeah. So personally, as a teacher, I steer people away from using psychedelics and plant medicine and whatnot to support their process. Though I do acknowledge there are some benefits there. However, it's a slippery slope, and sometimes we can bite off a little bit more than we can chew. And if we don't have the proper intentions in place, we don't have the proper post-trip integration tools available to us, we can make things a lot more difficult. So for me, what I'd recommend for anybody, and the beauty of the practices that I recommend, is that they can be applied whether you're dealing with Kundalini or not, at the beginning of the journey, at the middle, during the most intense periods, and maybe at the very end, even if you're fully enlightened and liberated like the Buddha. Hmm. The practices that I recommend are universal. So firstly, it's just self-care, eating well, getting some exercise in, just engaging in some sort of, being a little social, very basic things right there. And then for me, as the Kundalini began to awaken, it began to heal me emotionally and psychologically of different content that I was carrying throughout my life and even from prior lifetimes. So as this healing is happening, it's not fun, because all of that content gets brought up almost like you're vomiting all of the stuff that you can't carry anymore within your system, right, in the nervous system, within the psyche, within the muscles. And so what I would do is I would keep my hands on my heart And to every emotion, thought, feeling, sensation, memory, I would just say with each breath, I love you. I love you. And that love was directed at anything that was arising within my awareness. A thought, whether that thought was violent, negative, afraid. Oh, I see you, thought. I love you. I'm not trying to fight you. I'm not trying to get you to go away, or I don't see you as a problem. I see you as coming up to be released. An emotion, a memory from my childhood. Oh, I see you, memory. I love you. I'm not fighting you. Come forth and be released. Yeah. And this was how I identified on the, for me, in the most intense, extreme way, this was self-love. Every cell in my body, every manifestation within my consciousness, my mind, it was all noticed and loved without resistance. And this is how I was able to create space. And it was like a soothing balm around all the stuff that was coming up. And I recognized I'm not being victimized by this purification process. I'm being healed.
Yeah.
If I had a tumor and I went to surgery, I wouldn't say the surgeon is my enemy. I would say, oh, this hurts.
Yeah.
But thank you. I see you. I love you. I'm not trying to tell you to go away. So Brent, that's how I did it.
That's beautiful. That ties into something we learned from Ann Archer Butcher on this show with her husband, Alden, when he was given a stage 4 parotid tumor cancer diagnosis. And they told Ann, the doctors, that he may only have a few months to live. And she said, shut up. Do not say that. Do not let my husband hear it, because it kind of ingrains a belief system just by hearing that. And, you know, one of the things she described is exactly what you said. Rather than seeing cancer as something to battle and fight and kill like in a war, it was about love. And they began, and Alden began to, you know, imagine loving those cells. Loving those cells and nurturing, and the things that they encountered and came through, 4 years later, in addition to learning about natural botanical homeopathic medicine using the Monocore technology we talked about. But suffice it to say, 4 years later, he's jumping around like a spring chicken at 80 years of age, and overcome the things that they said were impossible, those that didn't have a belief system that encompassed some of the things we're talking about, that some would consider esoteric or just spiritual, right? Not grounded in reality. And I think that does a great disservice to what the power of divine spirit or these other names we've used can achieve that might be considered miracles. And I don't believe miracles are confined to books written thousands of years ago, that they happen every moment of every day if we're open to see them, receive them, and maybe help bring them into manifestation. I call that co-creating our life with the divine, with God, with the creator. So I'm excited to hear you say that as well from your experience, and kind of only validate some ways to a new or a different way for some people that might go, hey, I resonate with that. Let me try that.
Yeah, this is my intention here. And I love the way you put that. You know, language really shapes us. If we're battling this, if I'm going through something that's a battle, well, then if I lose, I'm a victim. Or if I'm losing or it hurts, I'm a victim, right? And so we snap out of this attitude, and it can really be empowering. So for me, maybe your audience has picked up on this. When it comes to Kundalini, I don't know all of the ins and outs, the details. There's ancient texts that go very deep into all of the different minutiae of the process. And some pundits may, disagree with me on some of the semantics of maybe what I've shared. And I admit, I don't have too much technical knowledge. My intention as a teacher is to bring people from a point of feeling like they're a victim to a point of feeling like they're being empowered, and that they're being healed rather than being victimized by this. Yeah. So often people aren't seeking it out. They have a spontaneous sort of Kundalini awakening. Life gets very difficult. And they think ever since this awakening happened, everything has been turned upside down.
Yeah.
So my intention is to say, hey, what you're going through is not a mistake. It's not random. It's not a curse. This is a known, documented, transformative process. And on the other side of this, if you give it some time and you cooperate with it and you stop seeing yourself as, you know, as if you're in a fight or a battle, you come into alignment with it as a co-creator, this intelligence, it will take you to some really incredible states of awe and wonder and relaxation in the nervous system and creativity, and put you on your purpose, and life starts to make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But you know, we have to overcome any victimhood or attitude of battle and resistance.
Well, yeah, opening up to the energies or the life force, and we can get movie references and talk about the Force, right? And we talk about the Star Wars mythology rooted in a lot of these ancient traditions, bringing it out in a contemporary, entertaining way. You know, that which feeds us, it emanates from us, it is us, all of that. But yet when you awaken to the Holy Spirit, for those that use those terms, it's just the beginning. It's like you've achieved it. It's the end. No, it's just the beginning. And it can open you up to some experiences that are not so pleasant, because you're starting to heal and release and unburden yourself from, you know, experiences that you might not even remember of having had, that are holding you back, that are wounds and injuries that keep you in a victim state of consciousness. You know, rather as a child or a creation of God, we're not victims. We are co-creating our lives. And many people, if they're, I dare say, spiritually immature, not to offend anybody, but believe that they are victims of everything around them rather than having participated in some way in co-creating their experience so that they can grow spiritually. And I believe rejoin the divine as, you know, masters in some way. I don't mean that in an egotistical way, but in a spiritual way.
Yeah. And in some respects, you can say that this process brings us into our own mastery. And it's not egotistical. I think it's our birthright to, walk confidently and have a sense of connection and understanding with something higher. So, mm-hmm. It's not that I'm a master over another. And, you know, even to me, this idea of a master as if someone who's perfect and has no work left, I don't know if that's a possibility, but that's not my take. I see this as just an ongoing evolutionary process. But it's not egotistical at all to say, hey, you know, I'm evolving, and this is good, and I embrace it, and others should as well.
Yeah.
Was
there a particular experience or series of experiences or a book or a story you shared that had Yvonne or someone from Spiritual Awakenings International reach out to you and say, hey, we'd love for you to present at our next event? How did that connection, how was it made?
I volunteer my time with an organization called When Lightning Strikes, and they're dedicated to peer support for those going through Kundalini Awakening and spiritual emergence. They're actually working on a documentary film about this process. So that'll be out at some point in the future. And they've got some really great big names that are sharing their story with Kundalini Awakening, When Lightning Strikes.
Is there a website for that?
Yeah, When Lightning Strikes Community. .com uh-huh.
Community. Okay. Thank
and,
you.
And they've got the trailer out for their film is on, it's on YouTube. Fantastic organization. And so one of the community members was in touch with Dr. Yvonne Kayson and said, hey, you know, check out some of Brent's work. And fortunately she seemed interested, and I had her on my show. I host a podcast as well, the Spiritual Awakening Show.
Cool.
So I connected with Dr. Kayson, and we unpacked Kundalini from her perspective. I learned a lot, and then she invited me to present at Spiritual Awakenings International. So I'm very, very excited about that.
Dude, that's awesome. By the way, again, links are up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com for this Sunday conversation, first airing on Sunday, May 5th, 2024. The event we're talking about, where Brent will be one of the 40 speakers from all over the world, is at spiritualawakeningsinternational.org. We also have linked up the specific page. It's a Saturday, Sunday event. Brent will be presenting on Sunday, June 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern time for an hour, and there'll be some Q&A available, so you'll be able to share some more. This is kind of a sneak preview, learning a bit about the backstory of Brent, which I'm fascinated by, and also your personal website, kundaliniawareness.org. We just learned about whenlightningstrikescommunity.com. It's funny, a little bit of my journey, my spiritual awakening, was motivated by my lack of health, good health. I didn't have it from when I was young, even though I functioned, but I was chronically ill. I was raised by doctors and pharmacists and drugs and medicines, and I prayed to God for healing, and I thought it would come as a lightning bolt, maybe, you know, a strike of lightning and miracle, I'm cured. And it didn't happen that way at all. In fact, what happened was I was given the gift of, let's say, spiritual insight, led to some books to read, to learn about and experience and exercises I could do that opened me up for 4 or 5 years later when I met a homeopathic doctor that emigrated from the Europe to America. And had I not had all of those other experiences that, even though I asked for healing, I got more spiritual enlightenment that allowed me to open up to possibilities I might not have considered had I not had, you know, some level of practice, prayerful spiritual practice, contemplative, meditative practice of connection, learning to listen to the guidance, the spirit, you know, however people talk about the Holy Spirit, divine spirit, the Ek. There's so many ways Kundalini and I were talking about. So however you get it, y'all, I just want you to get it. And I think these experiences that Brent is sharing might inspire you to find a disciplined approach to do that, as opposed to kind of randomly pop around and maybe you get lucky. I don't necessarily believe in luck, but I think there is divine providence and even interventions necessary to guide us and help us. But we also have to be open and ready. And that sometimes takes a little discipline and practice that got me on my path to healing. That was not something I grew up with. It's, you know, and it kind of, even though it comes out of Germany and the West, it's still a very subtle and divine force kind of reality that's not chemically oriented. So again, that's, you know, part of the journey here and how I see the intersection of these things, why I love to have these conversations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this is it's a fascinating conversation, and what you spoke to there, I think that's it's a real prayer, you know, asking for healing. Not because, you know, you're a young kid and your parents told you to pray before going to bed for everybody to be well and whatnot, you know. Mm. It's a real prayer from the heart with emotion, yeah, fueled by, you know, some fight in you, some desperation in you, some spunk there, right? And I think that, you know, when we have those types of prayers, you know, the divine really responds. For me, prior to this Kundalini awakening, I was beginning to feel a little bit of energy in my body. And so, like I mentioned, you know, the magic mushroom trip, my intention, yeah, before the trip, and I just said, you know, I want to get a little bit more in touch with the energy in my body. Oh, well, I got way more than I asked for. it's been almost 10 years since that experience. And I'm still working through that answer that I got, you know, getting more in touch with the energy in my body. And so, those prayers really get answered, really do.
Well, that's the old adage, be careful what you ask for, you might get it. And, you know, for me, if I had had a dramatic lightning bolt healing, I've talked about this now in retrospect, I'm like, what appreciation would I have for the gift? Maybe I would be grateful, but then what could I teach others? Pray for lightning and maybe you'll get struck too? Or what happened was I had to kind of, I don't say be beaten down, but life, you know, does its thing to kind of break away the resistance. So that when I was, you've heard this statement, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, or, you know, when the neophyte or the chila, however you describe it, the master appears, we have to be ready too. If we get something before we're ready, we won't recognize it. We might abuse it if we do sort of recognize it's there, and then we could create some destructive things in our lives. And that has happened, could happen through, you know, irresponsible use of even plant medicine, I think, versus the discipline I needed to engage in to be ready to handle the information that would come to me so that I can not only help myself, but dedicate my life as I always thought I would to help others, to empower others through, you know, broadcast media, natural medicine, homeopathy as well, or to have conversations like this that I feel ultimately are really empowering. And if anybody feels disempowered by this, I don't know what they're listening to, because this is about connecting to your source and finding different ways that resonate for you.
Yeah, it's, you know, we described earlier the intelligence of this force, right? It's not just an impersonal force. It's very, very intelligent, infinitely intelligent. And it does know what's best for us, and it knows our destiny and our journey and our mission. And we have to, in some respects, play along with its agenda. And so that's this, you know, this idea of, you know, thy will be done, you know. Mm-hmm. I may think I know what's best, you know.
Yeah.
But there's things in that the divine knows that are necessary, right, along the way, on the journey. And so this cultivates a sense of surrender. It gets us to put our ego out of the way, to give it up to a little bit of a higher power that can, you know, put things in our path that, you know, maybe we couldn't have orchestrated. Even if, you know, somebody gave you $1 billion, you probably couldn't have pulled off some of the miracles that, you know, the divine, right, pulls off with ease.
Yes, without money even. Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the ego again. There's an element of humbleness and humility associated with connection to the divine. It's so awesome. You're like, I, and when I pray, It wasn't me telling God what to do. It was a sincere asking, could I have some help, please? You know, I'm not sure which way to go, and the experts don't know. And there's a sincerity. And I think when you ask with sincerity, of course, the divine knows. You call that the infinite intelligence, God, whatever, spirit. It knows. And I think that's when we were opened up. But still, I wasn't given the miraculous healing. Sometimes that happens. Spontaneous healing has happened. I've talked to people with that. But for me, my journey required a lot of work, a lot of discipline, a lot of learning, a lot of digging deep. And yet I could have grumbled and complained, why, God, didn't you give me just that magic healing? Yet I knew part of my mission was to learn principles that others could use. And if I didn't learn them, again, what could I teach people? Pray, ask for help, and maybe you'll get it. Wonderful. I wanted to empower people and realize that we have a way that we can take control, as I said, not from an ego perspective, but genuinely take responsibility for our lives. And that's what I think we're asked to do by the divine. Doesn't mean there isn't room for surrender, because there are things bigger than me that I don't know that I can't do that. And that's, I think, the appropriate place where we turn it over to that, what do you call it, higher power, divine communication, and surrender it and maybe get out of our own way when it comes to our mind.
Totally. Yeah, we have to participate in our destiny. And the participation is not always smooth and easy. It's sometimes challenging. So the participation is what I was getting at earlier when I mentioned, you know, bringing these transcendent states into the human body and living it out. You know, we're here to live out a particular mission and calling. And, you know, of course, you said you've been doing radio for over 20 years. It's only natural that, you know, you would go through some transformation and then use your platform and your voice and your skills to share that with others. And so a part of my work is to, you know, when people say, you know, why won't this purification of Kundalini awakening, why won't it just get over with? How can I get it over with quick? And I think, well, you've got many lessons to learn along the way.
Yeah.
Because then you're going to maybe take advantage of, say, in your case, the platform that you've already built. And I encounter people like that. They say, you know, I'm an author, I'm a writer. I say, well, you're probably going to end up writing books about this stuff. Just give it some time. But you got to first collect the data.
Yes.
That takes some time. And I see this all across the board. Not everybody is meant to do like some obvious healing work, but at this time in the planet, many of us are, because so many are struggling and hurting and confused. And so, you know, the more people we have doing this type of work, you know, there's a sort of revolution taking place here.
Yeah. And there's a point where you say, you know what, I'm supposed to enjoy the journey. Yeah, it can be tough, but as my initial desire to leave this place, and I don't mean in a suicidal way. I'm like, we all feel discomfort and you know, difficulty and you know, what we struggle, you know, and even victim states of consciousness. I mean, we've probably all been through that. Maybe some are listening now are still feeling that. And so part of my motivation initially, honestly, was like, maybe I should go up to the mountaintop in a cave and contemplate my navel. It was like, everything would be just right. And then as I began the spiritual practices and disciplines and, you know, prayerful meditation, contemplation, and, you know, trying to remove the ego part of it. Not that I have no ego. I mean, you need an ego to go through the world as a human being, but I was kind of altered in my thought of what this journey was for. It wasn't to escape. And we mentioned that earlier. You mentioned that. It was to immerse ourselves in the gift of this lifetime and the purpose and reason we're here. And that also, I found, may shift over time. You know, it might not just be one thing. We might have a lot of little things too along the way. And it makes this journey exciting. And it makes it like, oh, I actually don't want to leave. This is really kind of cool. Even if it comes with some times that I'm like, oh, it's not so great. So there's a gift that you begin. And I began to recognize about the life that I was no longer trying to escape, but now trying to immerse ever deeper into it for the purposes I had apparently agreed to before I even got here.
Yeah. So grounding and integration is a very important part of my work. With my mission with KundaliniAwareness.org, the aim is to raise awareness about this process in a way that demonstrates that this is a, you know, a rational, credible, grounded phenomenon with practical purpose in the world. And my intention with that website, Kundalini Awareness, is to present this in a way that we can see, like, you know, we're not hippies trying to talk about, you know, let's just go live on the beach and, you know, meditate and everything is all good. It's like, no, we can incorporate this into our society for healing, for transformation, for creativity and innovation. This is the next stage in our evolution as a culture, as a people, as individuals. And we're evolving not off this planet. We're evolving deeper into this planet, and can be very influential in making some of the changes from, you know, some of the things that have been, you know, obviously taking place on the planet from lower states of consciousness. Now we're, you know, we can tidy up that kind of mess. And that's part of the work here. So we don't wake up and go through Kundalini or spiritual awakening just for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's for the planet. And often, practically universally, people come to recognize that we're all connected anyway. So what else to do but to help and heal the rest of me, which is the world, planet, my community.
Yeah, as our world is reflected outside of us from within us and vice versa, I wonder how, if you can speak to it, the transformation of maybe the relationship with your parents. You mentioned, you know, leaving the belief system that they had in their youth and adulthood years. And many people that have spiritual awakenings, sometimes, you know, they don't feel like they're part of the same family. And I'm not here, and I don't think you are, trying to break families up by this, these spiritual experiences. I'm hoping that, you know, it brings deeper love and respect and appreciation for each other. But, you know, as you said, it's not without its challenges when we have transformations and shifts in consciousness. Anything you can speak to in that regard from your personal experience?
Yeah. So this is one of the major themes in my work, is to help us to reconcile going through such a profound spiritual transformative awakening experience within a culture, society, a family, a community that doesn't necessarily understand it. Hmm. So the knee-jerk reaction is to think, I got to run away. I got to go and stay in an ashram or a monastery. That would be best. Or it's, I have to shut this down and make it go away. Or it's, I have to try and convince others to go through this with me. All three options, very difficult. Running away, shutting it down, convincing others, very difficult. Instead, what we can do is we can recognize that many of us that are going through this process today have spent prior lifetimes doing great spiritual work in isolation. And coming into this lifetime, we made an agreement. I'm going to bring my spirituality, my gifts, my awareness. I'm going to bring it into the world, into society. And not just keep it to myself in my, you know, meditation hut. Let's bring it out in the world. And so on some level, part of our consciousness selected the situations that we would come into, the people we would relate with, our parents, our family. So rather than thinking that they're in the way of your development, you could say they are the way for the development. Relating with them is the way. Now, it forces us to learn how to meet people where they're at, as opposed to expecting them to meet us where we're at. So if you ask me, if we're going through spiritual awakening and we have, you know, super high level of consciousness and our hearts are open, well, wouldn't you think that it's on us to meet others where they're at rather than to expect them to meet us where we're at?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we meet people in common ground. We use language that they can understand.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody doesn't want to be open to this, that's okay. We don't push, right? And it's the same with, you know, maybe some people are sick. You have some solutions. You have some remedies. They don't want to hear it. And everybody knows eventually, you know, we pull back. We say it's their healing journey. Let them go their way. And mm-hmm. So that's work for us. You know, it requires humility. It requires some understanding. So for me, very early on, I had some really profound awakening experiences. And I was so fresh and new. I was a young kid. I was a teenager. I eventually told my parents. I said, hey, you know, I'm enlightened. I had this really profound awakening experience. I'm enlightened. It was very premature, very unintegrated, very ungrounded. I was in a sort of a psychotic type state as a result of these awakening experiences. And they just, well, you know, you lost your mind, which is an appropriate response, right? So it forced me to go back to the drawing board, go back to doing some integration, to research, to seek some proper mentors, to sort of figure out how to integrate this awakening into the world so that I could function without scaring people away or thinking that I was better than other people. That's another thing that comes up too.
Right.
We have
right.
a profound awakening and I'm better than the people who are not awake and they're fast asleep. So we don't want to also, you know, bring that type of attitude to our communities as well. Of course, if somebody's experiencing abuse, sometimes people can often spiritually bypass and say, oh, this person's abusing me. But this must be a spiritual lesson. I'm meant to somehow figure this out. in my view, what you're meant to do is figure out how to leave the situation. But if it's everyday friction, I think that's, you know, Ram Dass said everything is grist for the mill. It helps us to process and develop and open our hearts even more.
The concept of, you know, turn a lump of coal into a diamond, right? It's a lot of pressure, a lot of heat, a lot of, you know, discomfort, or the making of a pearl, you know, in a, in an oyster, right? What is it? The grain of sand that's irritating, and how that manifests into something beautiful and even healing that can be utilized for the good energy that it brings. So you're bringing some great wisdom. You look like, I don't know, did you just graduate college? I mean, you look very young to have these experiences. Is it just that energy, that divine force, spirit flowing through you, keeping you young?
I don't know about that. I'm 31, still getting acne, and I don't know, maybe it's just still going through that puberty phase. But yeah, this happened to me very young. It began for me at 15. High school is a very difficult time for me.
And I
just had very, I didn't have any resilience to survive the anguish and the emotions and the anxiety. So I quickly looked for solutions, and I came across the path. Others, you know, they have difficult teenage years, which, you know, I had a quite typical teenage upbringing, you could say, but I just had very low tolerance for the suffering. So I sought a solution very quickly. So that's, you know, some may say I'm young. I just began this very young. I don't really know much else besides the spiritual path. And then, you know, I could also, you know, make an argument for prior lifetimes of spiritual development and whatnot, that sort of carried itself over into this lifetime. But I can't speak for myself, but when some people do go through these transformations, you know, the stress on the face can begin to, you know, kind of release tension, tightness. There's more vitality comes online, and some people can really glow.
Yeah, we talk about the vital force flowing through you. I love it. I appreciate you, your candor, and letting us know about your journey and your experience. And it just occurred to me, it's a joke or not, but, you know, we've witnessed the indoctrination happening at university levels and places around the world in the West that have no longer really seekers of knowledge, but, you know, more or less trying to lowest common denominator, keep the consciousness dampened. And I'm thinking for young people, you know, me as a parent, I didn't encourage my kids to go into those universities unless there was a really important reason. That now you've kind of given us another opportunity. If the young people are listening, mom, dad, not going to college this lifetime. I already did it last lifetime. You don't remember this. I couldn't bring my diploma, but I did that already. You know, we've had some of these experiences as well. So take that for what it's worth. I'm not telling you to do whatever, kids, because I know you're out there in the audience, but think about, there's a lot of good jokes that we can come up with in terms of previous experiences, lifetimes that we do indeed bring in to this lifetime, however we perceive it. So I'm greatly appreciative. Now, you're in Canada, and if I go to your kundaliniawareness.org website, again, we have the online. I'm going to tell everybody about your upcoming presentation for SAI, but is there anything local? We do have Canadian fans and listeners and viewers. Do you have meetings locally at all?
So if you visit brentspirit.com, that's my personal website.
Okay.
I don't host any meetings in person locally, but I do host weekly Q&A meetings, Kundalini Q&A meetings. And every Sunday night, I host a Kundalini After Dark live stream.
Okay.
And I have people come on that are having these experiences and share and relate and just be in the company of others to know, hey, I'm not crazy. I'm not alone. There's other people out there. And so we can compare notes a little bit. So Brent,
I just opened it up. Your page says, you're not crazy or alone. I like that.
Yeah. You're not crazy or alone.
Nice. Now, a couple of minutes left before we wrap up the Sunday conversation, Brent. I've said my piece about why I think people should attend the Spiritual Awakenings International event. You're part of it, and we've interviewed some others that are part of it. Is there anything you want to share about what you know, generate more excitement to say, you know, hey, this is a free event. Love for you to donate to support the organization too, but why should they come and listen and be part of this?
Yeah, so there are some really fascinating speakers on the Spiritual Awakenings International Conference. Something for everybody. If you look at the roster, it's a jam-packed lineup. And I think the conversations will be at the leading edge of the overall discussion of spiritual transformation, of evolution, of healing. And when I say leading edge, I mean, you know, things that maybe haven't yet been put together or presented in a way like this. Because as we know, this is all evolving. The movements are evolving, the insights, the healings, the modalities, it's all evolving. The individuals themselves are evolving. And so to be at the leading edge, I think this is going to be a really exciting event. I'll be presenting Sunday, June 9th, 2 p.m. But Eastern, yes, but there's presenters all on Saturday. They're speaking about near-death experiences, speaking about meditation. There's something for everybody there. Check it out. It's free, as you mentioned. Donations are what keeps it going.
Yes.
And, it's I think it's building up a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
For this movement here.
And if you guys want to, you know, step into a larger community and share experiences, I think people are, as my experience has been, Brent, very non-judgmental in a sense, to realize that there are many paths that coexist, and we're not here to dominate and control others. We want to enlighten people and inspire them to their spiritual path, whatever it may be. And it may be their orthodox path that they're on and have been on forever. And that's okay. And you might be able to gain some things that you can use in your own spiritual practices within the confines of your own religion. That isn't about conversion for anything or of anyone, just to really uplift through various experiences. And I'm always uplifted by interacting with folks that have a love of life, love of God, and they may experience it differently. But for me, I'm made better by the interaction.
Yes, me as well. And, you know, as they say, you take what resonates, leave behind what doesn't. I'm sure that much will resonate with much of your audience. And one thing to know is, you know, these are all human beings that we all relate with. This is the human experience that we're speaking about ultimately. And just being in the company of others that are having these quote unquote non-ordinary experiences, it can help us to feel like, you know, maybe they're not so non-ordinary and actually, you know, just a human thing that we can talk a bit more about.
Like you said, you're not crazy. You're not alone. Brent Spirit here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Appreciate you, my new brother here on this journey. I love connecting with you. And remember, all the links are in the show notes each day, 6 days a week in our Sunday conversation, robertscottbell.com, including links to Brent and the SAI event coming up. And I hope that we can get some more conversation going again.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. And to your audience, thank you so much for your time.
Yes. And thank you all for being here. Remember, the power to heal spiritually too is yours.